Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Matot Masai. This week, Rabbi Meir Schweiger discusses Matot, the battle against Midian. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member at Pardes and also serves as the Pardes Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week, we have a double portion, Parshiot Matot Masai. Today, I would like to examine one section in Parshat Matot, the story of the battle against Midian. This is chapter 31, and I'll be looking at verses 1 through 8. God tells Moshe, I want you to take the revenge of the Jewish people from the Midianites, and afterwards you will be gathered into your people. And Moshe then goes to the people and says, you need to hand over 1,000 men from each tribe in order to take the revenge of God against the Midianites. There is no general who is appointed to lead this army. Instead, there is a chaplain, Pinchas, the son of Eleazar, the grandson of Aaron, who is sent to accompany them with the holy vessels and the trumpets to take in his hand. The battle is waged. The Jews defeat the Midianites, do exactly as God said. They kill all the males. In verse 9, we are told how they also take the women and children as captives and take spoils. Right now, I'd like to leave that. But in addition to killing all the males, they also kill all of the kings of Midian, and in particular, at the very end, we emphasize that they kill Bilam ben Beor. They kill him by the sword. The same Bilam who two parshiot earlier in Parshat Balak three times blesses the Jewish people. This section raises a number of questions. Why is God seemingly so hysterical on the rampage? The idea of taking the revenge of God, the revenge of the Jewish people, to a modern ear, the idea of taking revenge is something which is onerous. Where is this coming from? Why is it that Pinchas is emphasized as the one who is perhaps leading the war, since we're not told of any other personality who seems to be in charge? And last of all, why is Bilam being put to death by the sword, the same Bilam who blessed the Jewish people? In order to understand this, we have to go back to the beginning of last week's parsha, chapter 25, verses 1 to 18. And in particular, we'll begin with 17 and 18. God tells Moses, Tzaror et ha-Midyanim, act with enmity, oppress the Midianites, v'hikitem otam, and smite them, not just hit them, kill them. And that directive clearly seems to be what our parsha is following up on. But there we're given an explanation. What's the explanation? Ki tzoririm heim lachem, because they are adversaries to you. They are enemies of you. In all of the subterfuge and trickery which they did in the story of Peor, and regarding the matter of Cosbi, the princess of Midian, their sister, who was struck down on the day of the plague, regarding the matter of Peor. Now, to understand those verses, we need to look earlier at the whole story that begins in chapter 25, the story of Baal Peor. Before I examine that story, I would like to just say that taking revenge is not something that just rubs us the wrong way. The Torah itself prohibits taking revenge. In Leviticus chapter 19, verse 18, The Torah says, Lo tikom velo titor et bnei amecha. Do not take revenge. Do not bear a grudge against the members of your people. And then the end is, V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. Love your fellow as yourself. So we see this juxtaposition between the prohibition of taking revenge and loving one. And the rabbis on that verse give us an example. What do we mean by taking revenge? If I were to go to someone and ask to borrow their axe, and they say no, and the following day they come to me and say, can I borrow your hoe? And I say, no, I will not give it to you. The same way that you did not give me the axe. That is called taking revenge, which we are prohibited to do. If you think about it, taking revenge has a certain element of measure for measure. I would even say on a certain level, there's even a certain logic, reason to it. We might say that that's also being fair. You didn't want to do something to me, I won't do it to you. Tit for tat. And yet the Torah says we shouldn't act that way. We shouldn't act measure for measure. And the Rambam, Maimonides, in explaining this verse in the Guide to the Perplexed, says that if you act in this type of manner, it is obviously behavior which will escalate, which will ultimately lead to violence, tremendous hostility and enmity. And since the Torah is interested in harmony, in coexistence, the Torah in effect tells us, don't necessarily do what's right. Don't necessarily do what would be called just. Forgo that. Be smart. Exercise compassion. Because ultimately, the Torah would like to see us coexist and not be in a state of war. And that seems to be the norm which the Torah is advocating. And therefore, what we have in our parsha, taking revenge, is clearly an exception to that rule. And how do we understand that? It's clearly a situation where we're not looking for a peaceful resolution, but we are engaging in conflict, which leads to bloodshed. For what purpose? Let us now go and look at that story in Numbers, chapter 25. The story which ultimately is the background for our parsha. It begins by saying, Vayeshev Yisrael Bashitim. The Jewish people settled down in Shittim. Vayachel Ha'am. And the people began, Liznot El Benot Moav. To prostitute with the daughters of Moav. In a number of places, the rabbis note the idea of Vayeshev, settling down, is not actually a positive thing. Because there may be certain situations where settling down becomes an expression of complacence, which ultimately leads to decadence. One place where this comes up is at the end of Parshat Vayigash in the book of Bereshit. When the Jewish people come down to Egypt, Joseph sends for his family to come down during a time of famine. And the family comes down, and they are settled in the land of Goshen. And in the very last verse of Parshat Vayigash, it says that Israel, Vayeshev Yisrael Be'eretz Mitzrayim, that they settle down there. They are fruitful, they multiply, they are grabbed by the land. And in a previous podcast, I discussed the idea that this verse is in effect saying that Egypt has become the new promised land for the Jewish people. All the terms that we would have expected that should have appeared in terms of the land of Israel, it's as if the land of Israel is the old country. This is now the land of our destiny. And according to the rabbinic understanding, the fact that they become so comfortable in the land of Egypt ultimately leads to a certain assimilation in the land of Egypt. ultimately leads to Jacob insisting on being buried in the land of Israel to remind them, this is not the land of your destiny. And if we go back to our verse, when you read our parsha, which describes the journeys of the Jewish people in Parshat Maaseh, the journeys through the desert, the term that is used throughout is they encamped in a certain place, vayachanu. It doesn't speak about vayeshvu or vayeshev. And that is why the rabbis see in the Midrash that there may be something very negative, that the Jews have now come to a place called Shittim, where they're settling down, where they are becoming complacent, where their guard is down. And that perhaps invites what follows: prostitution with the daughters of Moab. If I go back to our parsha for one moment, if we look at chapter 31, at the end of the story, when Moses speaks to the officers who had brought back the women and not put them to death, Moses says to them in chapter 31, verse 16, how could you keep these women alive? Behold, they were the ones who were an obstacle, one could say, to the Jewish men in the matter of Bilam, to hand them over to commit an act of sacrilege against God in the story of Peor. In this verse, Bilam is somehow incriminated in what happened in the story of Peor. The story of Peor was a result of the words of Bilam. Bilam, who brought about this act of sacrilege against God. And the rabbis perhaps also see a hint of this in chapter 24, verse 14. After Bilam blesses the Jewish people three times, he then says to Balak, and now I am about to go to my people. Let me advise you what this nation will do to your people in the end of days. And the rabbis see that by using the language, advise you, he's not just prophesying about what will happen in the end of days, but he's doing another thing which is not actually stated. He's giving him concrete advice how to now counter the Jewish threat. Balak wanted Bilam to curse the Jews. God did not let him do it. Bilam then says to Balak, if you want to hear my advice, this is how you can defeat the Jews. And the rabbis in the Midrash say, Bilam said, you cannot defeat the Jews by the sword. If you want to defeat them, you have to create a wedge between them and God. You have to cause them to abandon, to act treacherously to God. And then Bilam advises them how to do that. And according to the Midrash, Bilam told Balak, set up stalls, markets, along the desert route, where women will sell their wares. And the plot was to basically have young, attractive women who will sell their wares to the Jewish people, to the Jewish men, who will offer them great prices. And after doing it a few times, will then entice them, have a drink, have a meal, arouse their sexuality. And as we're told in the continuation of our story in chapter 25, it says that the people are prostituting with the daughters of Moab. But in fact, in verse 2, chapter 25, it says, they call out to the people to partake of the sacrifices of their gods. And the people eat, and they bow down to the gods. And according to the rabbinic understanding, the women say to the men, if you want to have sexual relations with us, first be part of our culture, be part of our people, engage in this orgy of worship of our god, Peor, a very, very base form of worship. And as a result, we have over here a confluence of two sins. One could say two cardinal sins in Judaism: sexual immorality, which goes hand in hand with idolatry. And although the element of idolatry seems to ultimately be the primary issue, but nevertheless, the element of sexual immorality plays a central role. And that is highlighted when all of a sudden there is a Jewish prince called Zimri ben Salu, as we are told in chapter 25, verse 14, who takes a Midianite princess named Cozbi Vatsur and publicly comes before Moses and, according to the rabbinic understanding, taunts Moses and says to him, "Am I permitted to have relations with this woman?" And before Moses can even say anything, Zimri says to him, "And if you tell me not, who allowed you to take a Midianite woman?" And the moment Zimri says that, Moses is neutralized, incapacitated. And when we read the story, Moses doesn't know what to do. And not only Moses, but the whole people, there is confusion. And it is in that moment that all of a sudden Pinchas comes to the forefront. And when the Jewish man and the Midianite woman go into the tent and cohabit, Pinchas kills them, makes a statement, does an act of zealotry to say this is something which is totally unacceptable, and whoever will engage in it will be put to death. And by taking this act of zealotry, Pinchas stops this defection from God. And as God says to Pinchas in chapter 25, verse 10 and 11, "Pinchas has removed my anger from the Jewish people in taking this act of zealotry. And in doing so, he has stopped me from killing the Jewish people." And then in verse 12, "Therefore will I establish with him a covenant of peace, not only with him, but with his seed forever." Because ultimately, he brought about the atonement of the Jewish people. The act of zealotry, which is extreme, which is not something which is a norm, which leads to the death of two people, ultimately saves the general Jewish population. What Pinchas does in this story echoes what we saw in a previous story, in the golden calf, when Moses is on the mountain and all of a sudden there is a breakdown in the Jewish people and they demand of Aaron to build a golden calf and then worship it, bow down to it, revel around the calf. There is a need for an act of zealotry to bring the people back to where they need to be. Moses comes down the mountain, smashes the tablets, burns the calf, and ultimately asks for those who are loyal to God to come and kill all those who were involved in the worship of the calf. 3,000 people are killed on that day, but ultimately the Jewish people are saved. I mentioned at the outset of the shiur, why is God so upset? Why is it, and in our story, that there is a plague which goes out, a plague which kills 24,000 people, where most of the tribe of Shimon dies? Why is God so upset? And I think one could make a very good case to say, in chapter 20, we have a new generation which has grown up in the desert, that is poised to enter the land of Israel. In chapter 26, last week's parsha, a census is taken of all those people, and we are finally on the cusp of coming into the land of Israel, and the Jews are in the process of making their way along the eastern side of the Jordan to eventually cross over. And then all of a sudden, I have the story of Peor, a story which brings me back to what happened at the Golden Calf. And it's as if we say, deja vu, and not only deja vu, but it's even much worse than what was at the Golden Calf. Because not only do I have idolatry, I have sexual immorality. Not only do I have sexual immorality, but I have the Jewish people who are assimilating with the Midianites and in the process abandoning God. The whole thrust of what happened here was to take the Jews away from God. Perhaps I should insert that although we speak in the section about Moabite women, it seems to be very clear that it was not only Moabite women, but Midianite women, the proof being Cozbi, who is a Midianite woman. Bilam is from Midian. There is, in fact, a very interesting rabbinic comment which says that Midian and Moab were always enemies, and all of a sudden they become united. What unites them? Their common enemy, Israel. And the way that they will destroy the Jewish people is not by the sword, but by undermining their relationship with God, by undermining their commitment to the covenant. And that is why the Jewish people wage war against the Midianites. One might say that in this case, there's a certain element of measure for measure. By taking up the sword, which normally is what characterized them, to have them put to death by that. Bilam, who also is ultimately a person of the sword, as he says to his donkey in Parshat Balak, if I had a sword now, I would kill you because you've taken me off the path. Bilam, who, a man of the sword, has usurped what is really the quality of the Jewish people, the power of speech, and who ostensibly blessed them, but in reality used this power of speech to advise Balak to ultimately destroy them. So there is an element of measure for measure here as a way of somehow preserving the Jewish people. And the Jewish people need to engage in this for themselves, perhaps, to make it clear that they have nothing to do with Midian. That this attempt to come near to Midian, but not only to the people, but even more so to their lifestyle and culture, which is one of prostitution and idolatry, is something that the Jewish people distance themselves from. In a way, it is a surgical act which ultimately saves the Jewish people. There's a certain cathartic element that is going on over here. And this is what needs to be done before Moses is brought into his people, before Moses ends his leadership and passes on. And I would like to just end with this. When we get to the book of Deuteronomy, we see again and again how Moses warns the people, do not engage in idolatry. Do not be influenced by the people in your midst. And it seems that there is a very, very good reason why he needs to make that point again and again. Because the Jews have already fallen once, even before they came into the land. And with all that the Jewish people did, when we subsequently read the book of Judges, we see how it is very, very easy for the people to abandon God, to abandon their mission, to completely lose their focus. So I would like to end by saying that our two parshiot, which conclude the book of Bamidbar, and which are then setting the stage for the book of Deuteronomy, when the Jews are on the threshold of coming into the land of Israel, these two parshiot are there to remind the new generation how easy it is to slip, to lose sight of who they are, and how much they need to always be aware of their mission, and how that sometimes it is very, very important to have those elements in the Jewish people, those zealots, who always keep them on track, who may in the end do certain acts which are extreme and which they recognize as being extreme in order to be able to preserve a norm which has to do with a covenantal relationship with God that ultimately should enable them or should be the basis of how they relate to the world around them. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.